Good morning, Lillooet, and welcome to another day of live broadcasting here on CHLS 100.5 FM. My name is Jeff O'Kelly. This program is Snooze Button. I'll be with you until 9 o'clock. We started with music by Tchaikovsky / Rachmaninoff. What we heard there was a lullaby written as a song for voice and piano by Tchaikovsky, but arranged there for piano by Rachmaninoff. Not just a simple incorporate the voice part in with the piano part kind of an arrangement, but a much more complex harmonic and textural elaboration of that piece. That was a recording with Portuguese pianist Siqueira Costa, and we'll come back and hear him in a couple more of these arrangements by Rachmaninoff, and I'll tell you more about them and about Costa himself in a few minutes. Right now, though, it is time for weather and road reports. Yesterday, apparently, 0.4 millimeters of precipitation. Yeah, I suppose there were a few times during the day when we had little, it was spitting a little bit, but not very much. The low yesterday, 0.5. The high made it up to 12.7. As of 7 a.m., the temperature is sitting at minus 2 degrees. A little chillier this morning, and the birds seemed to notice that. They were a bit quieter this morning on my walk-in than they were yesterday morning. Environment Canada tells us, though, today mainly sunny, except for a mixture of sun and cloud over southern sections this morning. Wind from the south at 30 kilometers per hour this afternoon. A high today of 11, and for the first time this year, they are giving us a UV index. It's listed as 3, which is moderate. Tonight, a few clouds. Wind from the south at 30 kilometers per hour, a low of minus 1. Tomorrow, a mixture of sun and cloud, wind from the south at 30, becoming light in the evening, and a high tomorrow of 14. Thursday, a mixture of sun and cloud with a low of 0 and a high of 12. Friday, sunny with a low of plus 3 and a high of 14. And at this point, Saturday predicted to be cloudy with a low of plus 4 and a high of 12. Sunday also predicted to be cloudy and maybe a chance of precipitation that day, but it looks like the temperatures are going to stay very comfortable. Taking a look at... I better find... what I need here, the temperatures across the country. There we go. Let's see, taking a look at conditions across the country and around the province. Right now in Fredericton, New Brunswick, it is minus 4 degrees with light snow. Montreal has mist at plus 3. Toronto plus 5 and cloudy. They've been enjoying a nice, not a terribly long, but a run of somewhat warmer temperatures. Apparently that's going to change tomorrow. Then we go to Iqaluit, where it's still pretty chilly at minus 31 with ice crystals. Winnipeg, partly cloudy and minus 9. Saskatoon is at minus 6 degrees and mostly cloudy. And Yellowknife, it's mainly clear and minus 29. Edmonton, 0 degrees and sunny. Calgary, mainly sunny and minus 4. Whitehorse is mainly clear and surprisingly warm, minus 1. Prince George, minus 3 degrees and cloudy. And a little closer to home, Clinton is clear and minus 12. Hope, plus 3 and cloudy. Kamloops, clear and minus 3. 2 degrees in Pemberton. And in Vancouver, it is mainly clear and 5 degrees. And there's not much to tell you on the highways here. Highway 40 has compact snow between Lillooet and Goldbridge. Highway 99 south, slippery sections between Lillooet and the Cane Creek Bridge. And further south, there are slushy sections south of Whistler. And that's all I've got. No notes for highways 1 or 12 today. That's it for weather and roads. A couple of things I forgot to mention yesterday when I talked a little about birds and what's singing at this time of year. Not so much with regard to singing at this point, but I wanted to mention local biologist Ken Wright. Actually, in late February, Ken saw a flock of the mountain bluebirds here that live here during the summertime. Seems very early, I know, in February, but these are birds that winter in the southern and southeastern United States, ranging up about as far north as Missouri or so. And when you consider the kind of winter it's been in the United States, and even in some of the southern sections this year, it's not that surprising that they might move to come back to Lillooet a little bit earlier than usual. I'm not sure if, you know, maybe we just haven't recorded them and they have been here before. But he did spot them, and I have no doubts about Ken's skills at identifying the birds. So they probably were thinking they got a good deal by coming here early. Excuse me. I also wanted to mention the white-throated sparrow, which has been hanging around at my feeders, ever since the end of November, actually. And the bird is still here. Every now and then I go for a couple of days when I don't see it, and I worry that it has decided to move on. But nope, not yet. Just a little bit early for it yet. Still waiting to see if that bird will sing or not. If it does sing, then it is a male. If it does not sing, it is a female. So I'm just going to have to keep my ears open for it, but I haven't heard it yet. I did see it yesterday, though, by the way. So just to let you know that it is still hanging around, and I'm very pleased about that. Okay, let's see. What are we doing now? We're going back to the music. Okay, Rachmaninoff and other composers. Actually, in this case, Rachmaninoff and Rachmaninoff. Everybody is familiar with, or at least has heard of, the C sharp minor prelude by Sergei Rachmaninoff. Fairly early composition. He was still quite a young man when he wrote the piece. Proved to be so popular that it became kind of a bane for Rachmaninoff, a weight around his neck that he did not want. Anytime he gave a concert, the audience would just demand that he played the C sharp minor prelude as an encore, even when he didn't want to. And he really got tired of that. And so he took a number of short pieces, mostly by other composers, and arranged them as encores, as short pieces for piano he could use as encores, and hopefully banish the C sharp minor prelude. It didn't work so much. They still wanted the C sharp minor prelude, a piece which I admit is pretty good, but it's not my favorite Rachmaninoff by a long shot. I absolutely love these arrangements that he made. So we're going to hear two more of these. First, we're going to hear one called Daisies, which is an arrangement of one of Rachmaninoff's own songs for piano and voice and piano. And it is probably, I don't have access to the text of the song, but I'm guessing it's probably a rather morose affair, as so many Russian songs are. But it's an absolutely beautiful piece here in this arrangement for piano. And then we'll go here. Then we will move to something much more cheerful. We'll hear Rachmaninoff's arrangement of the song "Wohin," which means "whither." Music by Franz Schubert that comes from his song cycle "Die Schöne Müllerin," the beautiful maid of the mill. And this is a much livelier and very cheerful kind of piece. And the song is about the young miller, who is kind of the protagonist of the song cycle, is singing this song, addressing it to a brook that he runs across in his wanderings, asking the brook where it's going, will it be running past the mill where the beautiful maid lives, that sort of thing. And you hear the brook. Schubert wrote the brook part into the piano, but Rachmaninoff further elaborated on it and gave it some rather saucy kind of harmonies, I must say. But it's a very attractive piece and has a great sense of fun. Also extraordinarily difficult, but then it's Rachmaninoff. The pianist here, Sequeira Costa, he was actually born in Angola, but I believe he is Portuguese. He has been playing particularly not Rachmaninoff, but romantic piano music for a very long time. Very well known for the romantic repertoire. He's recorded all of the piano concertos of Rachmaninoff, the piano concertos of Chopin. This disc of Rachmaninoff's arrangements and transcriptions. And apparently, just a few years ago, he finished up making a recording of all 32 of the Beethoven piano sonatas. Costa is in his mid-80s now, so I believe he has retired from the concert platform, but he still gives master classes and teaches and serves on juries and that sort of thing. And he's a great example of one of those many, many really fine pianists who are out and about there and who have careers. But he's never had a recording contract with a major recording label, and consequently, his name has not been all that well known. But he's very highly respected among pianistic circles, and with good reason, as this recording shows. So here he is in first Daisies, Rachmaninoff's own arrangement of his song, and then Wohin, an arrangement of a Schubert song. Thank you. two more of the encore pieces cooked up by Sergei Rachmaninoff so that he could avoid playing his prelude in C-sharp minor, even though the whole scheme did not work. We heard first his song arrangement of Rachmaninoff's own song called Daisies, just absolutely gorgeous piece, and then Wohin or Whither, an arrangement of a song by Franz Schubert, and the pianist in both cases was Sequeira Costa. Okay, it's 8:19. Let me tell you what's coming up today on Radio Lillooet. When Snooze Button wraps up, I'll leave you with the Jazz Blues Soul playlist, but not for long, because around 10 o'clock, I have to say 10-ish, because it all depends on when she gets here, it will be People of the Land with your host Rosalind Narciss. She's here on Tuesday mornings a little after 10. And then later today, you can hear student broadcasters Grace and William out of Lillooet Secondary School on weekdays between about 11:25 and 12:15. And then later this afternoon, Democracy Now! Between 3 and 4 p.m., fans of Noam Chomsky take note. I believe he will be appearing on today's show, though I don't think it's an hour-long interview with him, as it sometimes is. And then this evening at 7 p.m. is an encore presentation of Music for the Middle Ages with your hosts Jim and Aura. Just before we go on, I will mention something from today's edition of The Guardian, which I do like to check at this time of day, just to see if there's anything particularly interesting in it. There are many other newspapers I could check, but I just find The Guardian has interesting stuff, sometimes great photography features. And, yeah, kind of stuff that you won't necessarily find elsewhere. So today, it's an article called Eight Pronunciation Errors That Made the English Language What It Is Today, by David Shariat Madari. And I didn't have a chance to read the article in great detail, but I skimmed it. It's not one of those, it's not an article making fun of people for pronouncing words the wrong way. In fact, almost the opposite. It's an article that explains why many of the pronunciations now are different from what they originally were, and the kinds of errors or customs or whatever that caused them to come to be pronounced in those ways. Also, lots of interesting words that come, interesting words contained in the article as he explains those processes, words that come from the field of linguistics to explain how these processes occur. So, just a great article for anybody. It's not terribly long and it's not a hard read either, but a really good article for anybody who is interested in language and particularly in the English language. Okay, let's move on. We're going to listen to part of a string quartet by Joseph Haydn. We don't have time for the whole thing. We'll hear the string quartet Opus 33, number 3, the third and fourth movements. With his Opus 33 written in 1781, Haydn really upped his game as far as the string quartet was concerned. He had written lots before that. Opus 33, let's see, I think it starts with number 30. So he had already written 29 quartets, string quartets before this. And they're good, but they're in a slightly more antique style. He often finishes them with a fugue, which later on in the classical period ceased to be a common practice, although a few people did it here and there. These pieces, there are just so many little things about them that mark them off as being kind of a new beginning for Haydn. And I wish I could give you more details about that, except I'd have to get into technical aspects of the music, and really I would have to, even more importantly, study them more than I have. There's a great book by an American pianist named Charles Rosen, and the book is called The Classical Style. Now, this is a very technical book when it comes to music, although not exclusively. You can read large portions of it without necessarily having that much musical training, but he outlines many of the innovations that occurred in these Opus 33 string quartets, especially, although they continued to crop up in new innovations in Haydn's quartets. Haydn was already a mature man by the time he wrote these, probably in his late 40s, if I recall, and only about 10 or 12 years away from his first trip to London when he began to achieve such great notoriety in a good sense with the general public. At this point, he was still working for the Esterházy family at the their palace in Eisenstadt. And the quartets, this set of quartets, Opus 33, are known as the Russian quartets. That's simply because they were performed in the presence of Russian Grand Duke Paul, who later became Tsar Paul II of Russia. Grand Duke Paul and his wife were visiting Vienna, but pretending to be a Count and Countess von Norden, so they could remain anonymous, even though everybody knew who they were. And so these performances, or these quartets, were played, I don't know if it was all six of them or not, but performed in the presence of the Grand Duke Paul, and that nickname has stuck. The third movement is marked Adagio ma non troppo, slow but not too slow, and it, like many of the slow movements in Haydn's quartets, has a lot of elaborate fancy writing, particularly for the first violin to play highly ornamented statements of the theme, particularly later in the movement. And then there is a lively finale with an even livelier coda to it to finish off. We'll listen to the Kodai Quartet here in the music of Haydn.
Thank you.
Sorry, I left a little bit of extra silence at the end of that because sometimes Haydn will surprise you in his finales, as he so often does. Sense of humor comes to the fore, and he'll often just do an ending that'll have a yet one more da-da-da-da, that like the piece ended, but there would have been a pause. I was kind of expecting one, but it was not there. So that was the third and fourth movements that come from the String Quartet, Opus 33, Number 3, in the key of something or other. C major by Joseph Haydn, and that was a recording with the Kodály Quartet. Okay, time for public service announcements, and still very low on public service announcements right now, so I'll just give you the pool schedule for today. Aquafit gets underway soon. That runs on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 9 until 10 a.m. Later today, everyone welcome, 10:30 to 11:30. Lane swimming from 11:30 until 1 p.m., and everyone welcome 3:30 until 5 p.m. Then in the evening, lane swimming from 7 until 8 p.m. and kayaking from 8 until 9 p.m. for ages 16 and up. And the kayaking on Tuesday night is for less experienced kayakers. That's all I have. We're going to turn now to music by Jan Sibelius and listen to his Karelia Suite. This is music he wrote in 1893. Sibelius would have been in his late 20s at the time. And it was written for a pageant that was given at the University of Helsinki. I think Sibelius had spent some time studying there, and I know he had a brother that studied there as well. Karelia is a geographical region and, to some extent, I guess we should say probably a linguistic and cultural region that is located in southeast Finland, right on the Russia, on the border with Russia. And over the centuries, it's been kind of used as a punching bag, or has been split between the two countries, at times the whole region belonging to one country, at other times the whole region belonging to another country. Currently, it is split with part of it as a portion of Russia and the other part of Finland. So at the time this was written, I'm not sure, but I believe part of Karelia was under Russian control, but the Finns thought it should all be Finnish territory. I think generally the linguistic and cultural links are somewhat stronger, or at least at that time were somewhat stronger with Finland than they were with Russia. So this was really a bit of political agitation on Sibelius's part, as it was by the students at the University of Helsinki who put on the pageant. Kind of being a little bit subversive with this music. As I said, written when Sibelius was in his late 20s, and he had not yet developed the same kind of dark undercurrents, the sort of angst that you'll find in some of his later orchestral works, particularly the symphonies. It has a rather extroverted, cheerful sound, and a pageant, there would have been a stage show, but carried out without any words or singing or anything like that. And there's the program, what was being represented on stage is actually known here. The suite is in three movements. They are an intermezzo, a ballad, and a concluding march. So it says here, the suite opens with an intermezzo depicting 14th century woodsmen processing proudly and defiantly on their way to pay taxes to a Lithuanian duke. The second movement, a melancholy ballad, was originally a vocal piece. The pageant represented a deposed 15th century king, Karl Knutsen Bonde, sitting in his castle and listening to a minstrel. And the suite concludes with a festive march. It followed a call to battle issued by Pontus de la Gardie, a 16th century soldier who became Swedish high commander in a war against Russia. I guess that's one of those the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of things. Originally, there were something like 10 movements to this music for the pageant. The Karelia Suite and the Karelia Overture were the four pieces that Sibelius did approve the publication of, but I believe that extensive sketches for all the other movements still exist, and they have actually been reconstructed a couple of different times by different Finnish composers. But I've never heard that other music and would be very, very curious to do so. At some point, I will try and track it down. Anyway, let's listen to the three movements that there are. And this is a recording with the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra conducted by Kazuyoshi Akiyama. Thank you. A very optimistic-sounding statement of political defiance there by Jan Sibelius. We've been listening to the Karelia Suite, and that was a recording with the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra conducted by Kazuyoshi Akiyama. Okay, the time is 8:55. We do have time for an encore, and we're going to go back to pianist Sequeira Costa and hear another of Rachmaninoff's arrangements for piano. The piece we're going to hear for many years was known as the Polka de VR, or the Polka de WR. The VR is not standing for virtual reality. Actually, the VR stands for Vasily Rachmaninoff, who was Sergei Rachmaninoff's father. And Vasily was a leader of kind of a dance band, apparently a fairly successful one. The Rachmaninoff family was in reasonably comfortable circumstances. And Sergei Rachmaninoff had known this piece of music since childhood because he heard his father playing it all the time. And at least the story goes that he, for many, many years, believed that his father was the composer of this polka. In fact, it was composed by somebody else named Franz Behr, B-E-H-R. But Rachmaninoff did not know that, supposedly, at the time that he made this arrangement, which I think comes from the 19-teens, if I can put it that way. The piece is very lighthearted, quite so for Rachmaninoff, and I don't think he does quite as much harmonic elaboration in this piece as he did in some other pieces, some of the other arrangements, but it has a really nice sense of humor. This is also one of those pieces, one of those tunes, that every now and then, quite unbidden, crops up in my consciousness and just kind of stays there and stays there for a full day at a time. Here is Sequeira Costa with music by Franz Behr, arranged by Sergei Rachmaninoff. Thank you. That was the Polka de VR, or as it should be called, really, the Polka de FB, Polka by Franz Baer, arranged by Sergei Rachmaninoff. If you missed the introduction, the explanation is that for the VR is that Sergei Rachmaninoff thought that this tune was by his own father, Vasily Rachmaninoff, because he had heard it played many times by his father when he was a child. Okay, it's 9:01. That is